Thank you. Thank you very much. For coming to this meeting. I declare the meeting open. We have called this meeting and invited three companies. The first one is KZN Disconnect and Dongyi Electronics on integrated e-driving test system. The second one is Vodamex, and the third one is AA, the representative from AA is coming. However, we will start with a presentation by our research, and I'm going to explain why. But before we do that, I am going to open an opportunity for introduction so that we can get to know one another. And thereafter, I will explain the purpose of this meeting and what we seek to achieve through this meeting. we have Vodamex, and we will ask the chairman of Vodamex to introduce his delegation. And we then have KZN Disconnect and Dongyi Electronics. Also, again, here we will ask the senior member that I see here is the vice president. And we will then wait for AA when the delegation has arrived, and we also give them an opportunity to introduce themselves. And we have today we are dealing with traffic management. And it's about your area, honorable, your area. So we expect more questions from those guys. Let us then start by introduction. I will start by introducing myself and allow members to do the same. Then we will come to Vodamex and Dongyi. My name is Ruth Bimbo. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Transport. I'm deployed here by the African National Congress. Today is the big day for me. Morning, everyone. My name is Doris Labute, a member of this committee deployed by the one and only party. Thanks.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Lito, my surname is Suka. I'm a member of this committee, Transport. I'm a member of the African National Congress, the ANC. Thank you.
I'm Nombuyise Longele from Housing, ANC from Housing, and I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Pakiso Mbele, a member of the committee. Obviously deployed by one and only Congress of the People.
The name is Manny DeFreitas, so I'm a member of the Sport Trade Committee.
Stuart Farrow, also a member of the Sport Trade Committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Hugh Mjali. I'm the chairperson of Vodamex. And next to me is a colleague and the director at Vodamex. His name is Gordon Swanepoel. And on my right-hand side, we have Herb du Plessis, also a colleague and a director from Vodamet. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. My name is Dennis Mamela. I'm the chairperson of the consortium for DigiConnect as well as Dongle Electronics. On my right, I have Lloyd Lotz. He's the director within DigiConnect. I've got Mr. Kim on my left from Dongle Electronics. He's the regional manager for the company here in Africa. Next to him, I have Mr. Kohn. He's the vice president of Dongle Electronics in Korea. And on his left is Mr. Kim again. He's the executive director for Dongle Electronics from South Korea.
Good morning. My name is Colin Klepper. I'm the acting CEO of the Road Traffic Management Corporation.
Thank you. We are waiting for, we will continue, and then when the representative from AA arrives, we will give him an opportunity to introduce. The purpose of this meeting is to look at how we as a country, South Africa, are responding to issues of fatal accidents. We view the fatal accidents with a serious note. We know that there are campaigns. The Arise Alive campaign that was introduced is part of the program that is run during the festive season. There is also the ARTO that has been put in place by the Department of Transport, which the Road Traffic Management Corporation has a responsibility of implementing to try and check the carnage that is happening in our roads. We have, as a committee, the responsibility of conducting our own research and also of conducting our own studies to try and establish what is there in the market, how it is applied, and what results does it yield. We do that because there are situations sometimes where there will be a suppression from the official side in introducing a particular technology, or from the consultants that we employ as government to introduce a particular technology. And if then we don't conduct our own research and expose ourselves to what is available, then we would not get to where we want to get to. We also have the responsibility of assessing the impact of what we already have and establish whether it is yielding positive results, and if there is a need for improvement, we effect that. We also have a responsibility of ensuring that what gets pronounced by the president, state president, during the State of the Nation address, gets translated into programs of action by various departments. And also, what gets pronounced by government as priority service delivery areas get translated into programs of action of the department. What gets pronounced by the minister during the budget speech as a program that the department has to work on is translated into practical action. Now, in terms of what we are dealing with today, the minister presented to us during the strategic planning what he signed as a contract between himself and the president, the deliverables by the minister. And one of those is to reduce fatal accidents by half by 2014. We are in 2011, which means we only left with 2 years to get to 2014, because we are on November of 2011. So from November 2011 to November 2012 is 1 year. From November 2012 to November 2013 is another year. And then we have 2014, where we shall be looking at the results. By that time, we should have reduced the fatal accident on our road by half. What that means then is that if the fatal accidents per annum are sitting at 16,000, by 2014 we must be at 8,000. And when we then are presented by our researcher with the statistics of the rate at which we are reducing the fatal accidents, we will then arrive at a situation where we can begin to say, shall we meet those targets or not? And if then the presentation, the statistics that are given to us will be indicating that the fatal accidents that are still happening on our roads are not getting down in a number that would lead to a situation where we will have reduced the fatal accidents by 50% in 2014, it would mean that there will be a need for us to improve on the strategy that we have agreed on. It would mean that the strategy that we currently have doesn't yield the desired results, and we then need to look at other means. To me, 8,000 people per annum is a lot, because it could be 8,000 people from different families, meaning that 8,000 families get affected. So I would love a situation where, although the department, the minister has signed a contract with the president that says we will reduce road accidents by half by 2014, if there are instruments that can make us reduce the fatal accidents by more than 50%, I would be much happier to see that, because 8,000 for me would still be a lot. It would still be a lot because the 15,000 that is currently the annual number equates to 14 billion rand in monetary terms. Money that could be better utilized if we were to prevent those deaths from happening. But we are still talking about the monetary implications of the fatal death. We are not talking about what happens if the both parents get killed in an accident. The emotional suffering that the children remain with. How does it feel to grow as an orphan as opposed to growing being taken care of by your parents? We are not talking that we have not measured. We have only measured the financial implications. And I know I have an orphan in my house. My granddaughter doesn't have her both parents. We are able to provide for all her needs, but I can tell when she is thinking she has everything, we've provided with everything, but I can tell on the day where she is missing the fact that she doesn't have parents. When other children move to cars, particularly during Christmas, move into cars, we are going to a Christmas party. She will stand and wait for the person who is going to invite her into a car. The performance of those children in achieving the education, academic qualification, gets affected. Even the behavior, some would commit suicide because their parents have died and they have lost hope. And some would get absorbed by the criminal element because they have no guidance. So the effect, the social effects of this accident are more than the monetary value that we are using to measure the cost to the country. Again, in terms of, can you say, all my children now are no longer at a school going age. So I'm not supposed to be using my resources to educate my children because my children are above school going age. But because Nozipho died, I then ended up with a responsibility of having to raise Kanisile and give her the same support that I gave to her mother. So we can then not attach and assess the damage that is caused by fatal accident. But also, if we are losing 16,000 people per annum, it means we are losing people that would have been productive and contributed positively to the economic growth of the country. Because most of the people that die are people that are going to work or going to school. The most productive sector in of our society. So, we want to assist Collins, we want to assist you in RTMC to do a two-pronged approach. While implementing the strategy that is already there, you also are evaluating the results so that if there is a need for you to improve, you then are able to do so. Because it now has power as the portfolio committee to redirect budgets. We were able to respond positively to the issue of the railway transportation in this country because the CEO of the Optrasa kept on saying the red flag. And we want you to do the same, to raise the red flag and say, yes, there is arrival life, but if the arrival life is not yielding any results, you must be able to say so. And know that you have the support here. That's what we want to effect. We'll ask the researcher to start and make a presentation, but I also want to just talk about what has been in the media. I remember very vividly that the scholar transport that was transporting children collided with the train. It was the attitude of the driver because other cars had stopped. And then he overtook stationary cars and went straight into a train. And he lost 10 lives. That was last year. Not very long after that, a bus is taken to a testing center, a roadworthy testing center. It is taken off the road. It's unroadworthy. 30 minutes later, the very same bus gets a roadworthy certificate. And in less than an hour, it kills more than how many people? 14. And those were school children. To me, again, that is an attitude either of the driver or the owner of the bus company colluding with the testing center. It's an attitude problem. It's not, it has got nothing to do with any other thing, it's attitude. I am not afraid that to drive an unroadworthy bus and subject the school children to death because I need money. So money is of more value to me. I cannot stop today and fix this bus and then call another service provider and bring in a better bus to transport these children because I am afraid that I'm going to lose money. That is a very bad attitude. Choose to make money at the expense of the lives of the people. That was then followed by another accident in Free State. Again, it involved school children. How many were they, Colin? There were more than 10. Yes. That was followed by this is all public transport you're talking about, mini buses. That was followed by another accident in Pietermaritzburg, where I live. Taxi driver approaches traffic light. Red, there are cars, about 6 cars, waiting for the traffic light to turn green. He's supposed to stop. In front of him, there is a big truck coming the opposite direction. He chooses to overtake all these cars, hoping that the traffic light will turn green when he has overtaken the first car on the road, and then stopped where the cars are not supposed to stop to wait for the green light. It's a conscious decision of not respecting the lives of the people and not respecting the rule of law in the country. And I think that as public representatives, we need to think differently and not only put the responsibility of saving the lives of the people on government alone. We need to effect laws that are very much biting to members of the public so that they can feel that this country has got laws and people of this country are more important than the money that those people want to make for themselves. We are all here representing the public. We don't stay with our children as much as we would love to because we are representing the interests of the public. We cannot then subject the same public to a situation where the laws of this country can be violated and people get a massage kind of treatment. Will be arrested, but we don't know what the sentence is. I have read your research. You talk about the arrest, you don't talk about the sentences. So that is what we are here for. We are here to say our hearts are bleeding. Our hearts are bleeding. We are losing too many lives. Not because those people have got illnesses. It's people who wake up in the morning, fit and sound, hoping to return in the afternoon. And the next thing, the traffic officers, or you get a phone call from a hospital to be told that your loved one is normal. I know how it feels because my eldest brother died of a car accident. And if by then I had not acquired a driver's license, I don't think that I would have had courage of getting a driver's license because of the condition he was in when I saw him in Washburn. It's a very painful situation to go through. The person who leaves home, going to work, and before the start, the time at which he starts to teach, then we get a phone call that my brother has been killed in a car accident. He's the father to the children. He is an asset in the country because he is a teacher. That doesn't mean that other people are not assets. Everybody is an asset to his family and the community. And 16,000 people per year, not ill. This committee has to do something that will shape this country and change the mindset of the drivers in this country. We're going to ask the researcher, Ms. Ongezi, to make the presentation of what is happening in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members, and good morning, everyone. My presentation will be made in the following format. Firstly, I will look at the annual road fatalities for the 2009-10 financial year, and in that regard, I would like to highlight the fact that ideally, one would have liked to make a comparison between 2009-10 and 2010-11. But due to the unavailability of data pertaining to the latter, that is 2010-11, I mean, I was only able to focus on 2009-10. But to compensate for that, I mean, I will look at 2009-10 and 2011 season. So that, I mean, I think doing that would enable members to have a clearer view of the state of affairs regarding road fatality in the country. And subsequent to that, I will then look at measures that are put in place to address road carnage. And eventually, as the person has correctly pointed out, I'll try to assess whether the interventions that have been proposed by either RTMC and agencies responsible for road traffic management as well as government are yielding any positive results. According to the World Bank, more than 1.7 million people die on road crashes across the world on an annual basis. And about 70 of these road crashes occur in developing countries. Africa has the highest road injury fatality rate of all the World Health Organization regions. What is the state of affairs, pertaining to South Africa? Unfortunately, South Africa is not immune from the state of affairs that I've just highlighted. And to reiterate what the chairperson said, it is estimated that more than 16,000 people die on South Africa's roads annually, costing the country more than 14 billion rand. And it is said that if nothing is done to curb the carnage, road crashes will be the second largest cause of death by 2020, which is higher than HIV and AIDS and malaria put together. Yeah. Various commentators have suggested various state strategies with regard to addressing the issue of road accidents. But the third reality is that road accidents are not decreasing, and when they do decrease, they do so at an unacceptable rate. It was then against this background that the Alive Road Safety Campaign was launched in 1997. The main objectives of Alive Campaign were and still are reducing the number of road traffic accidents by 5% compared to the same period the previous year, improving road user compliance with traffic laws, and finally, fostering an improved working relationship between traffic authorities and various levels of government. What was the status quo in 2009? And here, I'm referring to the annual road traffic statistics. From 1 January to 31 December 2009, there were 10,857 fatal crashes, translating into 0.48% over the same period in 2008. However, the number of fatalities during the same period decreased by 107, that is 0.77%, from 13,875 in 2008 to 13,758 in 2009. The driver, passenger, pedestrian fatalities constituted 29.3%, 6.49%, and 3.98% respectively of all the fatalities. The human factor contributed 82.85% to total crashes, while the vehicle factor contributed 9.13% and road and environmental contributed 8.2%.
During, now I will be making a presentation on what happened during the 2009-10 period. The Arise Alive Road campaign commenced from 1 December 2009 to 11 January 2010. According to the Road Traffic Management Corporation, 397 drivers, 637 passengers, and 548 pedestrians emanated from 1,447 fatal crashes during this period. The highest number of fatalities was recorded on roads within cities and towns, followed by provincial and national roads. Of the 1,582 road deaths, the provincial breakdown was as follows. KwaZulu-Natal had 298, followed by Gauteng at 297, and the Eastern Cape had 215, Limpopo had 201, Mpumalanga 169, Western Cape 163, Free State 132, Northwest 123, and then lastly, Northern Cape at 66. I would like to believe that Northern Cape has, the lowest number of deaths given that it is, the smaller population growth. During the 2009-10 period, law enforcement officers conducted 1,500 roadblocks throughout the country and checked more than 1.2 million vehicles and drivers. More than 6,000 vehicles, including 536 buses, and 1,609 taxis were impounded, suspended, and or discontinued. More than 5,900 arrests were effected, including drunk driving, which constituted 3,917, reckless and negligent driving, which made 314, excessive speed, which stood at 415, overloading, 250, public transport offenses, including taxis and buses, 1,246, driving licenses and forged documents, 1,251, pedestrians, jaywalking, 1,218. Jaywalking means crossing the road without taking the necessary safety precautions. Between 1 December 2010 and 8 January 2011, 1,421 fatal crashes occurred, resulting in 1,561 fatalities. The three major accidents were the one that took place in KZN, in Tubatuba, where a minibus and a mid-bus collided, resulting in 20 fatalities. Similarly, there was another one, also in KwaZulu-Natal, where a single minibus overturned, resulting in 11 fatalities. During the above period, that is 2010-11, the provincial breakdown of fatalities was as follows. KZN against 232, followed by housing at 200, Eastern Cape 169, Limpopo 155, Western Cape 127, Mpumalanga 115, Northwest 98, Free State 90, and lastly Northern Cape at 35. The identified contributing factors were as follows: speeding, overtaking when not safe to do so, fatigue, overloading, and finally tire burst. What role was played by law enforcers during this period? Between 1 December 2010 and 8 January 2011, 45 motorists were arrested for excessive speed, and these included the following incidents. On 8 January 2011, a speedster was arrested for traveling at 208 km per hour and being three times over the legal alcohol limit on the N1 South near Johannesburg. On 6 January 2011, a human relations officer was caught speeding at 1221 km per hour
on the N4 near Harankuwa. Free State Ministry for Sports, Arts and Culture, the Nkosule, was arrested for speeding at 1255 kilometers per hour in a 120 kilometer hour zone. He pleaded guilty and was sentenced to a fine of 20,000 in the Prefontaine Magistrate Court. How has the South African government responded to the epidemic? The South African government has committed itself to reducing road fatalities by 50% between 2007 and 2016, and this is also in line with the country's commitment to the Millennium Development Goals. Concomitant with this commitment, the government has joined the UN's Decade of Action for Road Safety 2011-2020 and devised an engaging and multi-pronged program involving all organs of society with a view to arresting road deaths. The program includes, but not limited to, the finalization and implementation of South Africa's National Road Safety Strategy and Action Plan for 2011-2020. The strategy focuses on data utilization of human and financial resources across spheres of government to address road deaths. And also in terms of strategy, this province, district municipality and local municipality must report every month on the number of road accidents occurring in their area, as well as what the causal factors are and how these are being addressed. On 15 April 2011, traffic officers who form part of South Africa's First National Traffic Intervention Unit commenced duty. The unit is deployed to high accident frequent locations and traffic hotspots across the country. As of May 2011, not less than 10,000 drivers are screened every month for drinking and driving. The new National Road Enforcement Plan is rigorously enforced, and the DOT has made amendments to the Road Traffic Act. Moreover, as of November 2011, driving over the prescribed speed by more than 30 kilometers per hour in an urban area and more than 40 kilometers per hour outside an urban area may result in suspension or cancellation of one's driving license. The DOT has stated that the national rollout of the Administrative Adjudication of Road Traffic Offences Act and the point demerit system will be announced in due course. And I think that perhaps Congress will be in a position to enlighten the members as to when this will be effected or done. The DOT is also in discussions as regards proposals calling for the total ban on consuming alcohol while driving and or lowering the current legal alcohol limit, daytime running lights, and compulsory period of vehicle testing. The DOT is also strengthening partnerships with government, particularly with the Department of Health, Social Development, Education, and Police. The DOT is also improving its data and reporting on road fatalities and injuries. It is also embarking on a massive education and communication campaign on road safety. Progress is being made towards ensuring that road safety education forms part of the life skills curriculum in schools, and that every grade 11 learner will have a learner's license, and that every 18-year-old will have a driving license. Are we making any progress in the country? It is a truism that road fatalities stubbornly refuse to go away. The judges made, the interventions made, have yielded positive results, and the national rolling enforcement program is just a case in point. Since its inception, the following achievements have been registered. 12,984,120 vehicles and drivers were checked. 5,540,475 fines were issued for various traffic offenses. 18,527 drivers were arrested. 50,272 unroadworthy vehicles, the majority of which were buses and taxis, were discontinued from use. In August 2011 alone, more than 4,000 arrests were effected and 3,429 vehicles was discontinued from use. In addition, from 31 August to 11 September 2011, 71,985 transport vehicles were stopped and checked. 210 square transport vehicles, 47 buses, 108 minibuses and 41 trucks were discontinued from use, and 18,244 fines were issued. More than 230 public transport drivers were arrested as follows. Thank you, pardon. 13 for drink and driving, 10 for excessive speed, 8 for reckless and negligent driving, 24 in connection with transport payment, and 171 for overloading. In conclusion, I'd like to say combating road fatalities is no longer government responsibility, and saying that would be echoing the sentiments that were expressed by the chairperson. And adding the mind shift is needed in order to substantially lower the fatal rate in South Africa. All road users should take road safety very seriously and should make it a priority. In a similar vein, government should continue with its campaigns, road shows, and awareness programs to educate the public about road safety. The importance of safe road infrastructure should also not be underestimated. Pedestrian safety should always be borne in mind when considering road safety, especially in poorer communities where pedestrians are prevalent. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We will move with a speech. We have been joined by, yes, a representative from AI. If you can introduce yourself, sir.
Good morning, Madam Chair. It's Gary Ronald from the Automobile Association. Thank you very much for this.
We will then, we are not going to engage on this, except if there is additional information that Mr. Collins would like to add. Like, I have the researcher co-opting you to his research and say you would be more informed on a particular issue. Would you want to add on that one?
On the ARTO, we are awaiting the consultation process that is going to ensue into a summit. Once the summit has been done, then the date will be announced. But safe to say, to the presentation, I can see that the focus has been on fatal crashes. But the less talked about people are the ones that are still walking the earth, 60,000 of them every year. More than 2,000 of them every year, quadriplegics. So that's the nature of the epidemic we are dealing with. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Collins. Then we will move to
we
will move to the presentation, and I also want to clarify the objective here. What is it that we are looking at? One, we are not looking at the companies per se. We are looking at the concept. Of course, a concept could be developed by a company. There are people who have creative minds who invent things. And those people are only 5% in the whole world. People who can think of things that are not there. people will turn problems into challenges and then come up with solutions. Today we are not going to address the Kanban because that is not our responsibility as a portfolio committee. Our responsibility as a portfolio committee is to look at the problems that the country has and then look at whether there is a solution that has been invented somewhere. The application and the choice of the for the best technology doesn't happen at a portfolio committee level. It is dealt with at another level. We don't get involved in that. What we get involved in as a portfolio committee is to say there is a solution. And then if the solution cannot be applied in our country, we then assess conditions. If we feel that that solution is good enough to address the issues that we are faced with, we would then facilitate the legislative framework that would lead to the application of that. That is what our responsibility is. So, we don't want to be misunderstood to be seen as if we are marketing certain companies. We are not. We are dealing with the problem in relation to possible solutions in terms of the concept. This is what other countries are doing, or this is what is available in our country. And then we would then on our own engage the department and RTMC to look at whether we can visit countries that have this different solution and see how we can, what is it that we can learn from them. And if the solution is within the country, we visit that place and see how that solution. And if there is a possibility of trying the solution to see whether it works, we also can recommend that the department tries this solution and see what results can be yielded. But that doesn't say that we are choosing a particular company or a particular particular company. Would have appreciated if there was a government that was had invented, then we would have called a particular sphere of government to come and present a solution. Unfortunately, we could not find one, which is why we are inviting companies. Okay. I just wanted to clear that in case there is media and media maybe thinks they may think that we are adjudicating tenders here. We are not. Let's say KZN, did you connect?
during tea time. I'll pass it on.
Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for the opportunity to come and share with you the solution that we have put together to address some of the problems that have been, you know, highlighted in this house this morning. Maybe to just mention, Chair, in passing that, you know, as the researcher was going through the presentation, you know, my colleague from Korea actually mentioned to me that 20 years ago, these problems that you are actually experiencing in South Africa were also, you know, experienced by Korea, you know. The numbers are almost, as you know, the population is around 49 million. The numbers are almost similar, of, you know, of what they actually experienced. But what is also of interest to us is the human factor, that 82.85% of the causal factors are human factors, you know. You know, again, you know, the area of philosophy that deals with technological determinism is problematic. In other words, it's not a car that kills a person, it's a person that drives a car that commits, that's behind it, that whole thing. So our approach, you know, here in terms of the solution that we're providing is that, you know, we maybe as a country begin to actually to pay particular, you know, attention and put more resources on the addressing the human side of things, so that as we go down the line, we sort of address the real you know, the nub of the issue, the real cause of it. And maybe to say that as part of the introduction that we put together this solution together with our Korean partners, you know, in order to actually to respond to the announcement, Chair, that you alluded to earlier on by the minister during his budget speech, to say that
maybe also we need as a country to begin to go down and say at a school level, you know, how do we begin to ensure that, you know, as our young people graduate from high schools, universities and colleges, they have the right kind of skills, knowledge, competencies in terms of dealing with that, so that we actually, you know, go down to the source, as it were, you know. So that's where this system that we are actually putting forth here is going to be actually trying to address. It's an integrated system that was actually introduced in Korea, as I said earlier on, after also the, you know, 20 years ago when they also went through the, you know, this kind of a situation where many people were dying on the road, where there was a high level of in a number of people, you know, purchasing and procuring vehicles. As a result, it created, you know, those kinds of problems. And they came up with an integrated e-driving system, which sort of assisted in a big way in terms of addressing the problems. And what we're saying is that we're fully cognizant of the fact that, you know, municipalities, you know, local and district and provinces are responsible for testing and all of that. But we're saying we need to come up with a system that will address and pay particular attention to young people in this regard. In terms of the road mapping of the presentation, these are the, you know, the areas that we're going to be touching briefly in terms of the system. If I may ask, you know, madam, in terms of time, how much time do we have? Okay, so how much are you giving me? Fifteen minutes, that's fine, I think that's okay. In terms of the outline, the automated system looks at, you know, your testing centers. How do you to begin to address, you know, the issues that are specifically, you know, related to testing, you know, standardization, you know, automation. Because if you're talking, you know, thousands and thousands of young people, in school, you need to have a very robust kind of system that will ensure that, you know, they, you know, standardization across the board, there's capability in terms of managing that kind of system, you know, simplification of the system, rapid processing, you know, etc. I mean, I remember when I was in Korea in April. I mean, these guys showed me, you know, it took less than 5 minutes to actually to issue a license, you know. But the system is world-class system in terms of what comes out, you know, at the end of the day. So the system talks to issues like, you know, the fairness of the system, you know, in terms of speed, you know, the labor cost, you know, etc. But also maybe to say that in terms of where the system has been applied, etc. About 500 sites in Korea, in South Korea, are actually utilizing the system. There are 30 sites in Vietnam, you know, 13 in Russia, also in China, and there are these countries also that are being, you know, piloted by our partner here, Dongyi. Now, how does the system work? You know, if you look, you know, right there, the top would be your main server. The system is you know, you know, complicated, you know, technology system which, you know, requires, you know, quite a deep understanding in terms of, you know, how this thing works. But what we're saying with our partners is that we want, you know, to work with communities in South Africa, you know, and we're specifically looking at cooperatives where, you know, there's going to be, you know, transfer of skills in terms of getting people from communities to run with this system, you know, transfer of technology, you know, and you know, detailed, you know, integrated, you know, training, you know, that ensures that when a person goes through the system, you know, we know what is actually the input and we know what is the output. The registration itself has got to be, you know, tightly controlled to ensure that at the end of the day, you've got the right kind of product that you want. The issuing of the licenses, the theory testing system, the practical test as well as the road test. Those are the different, you know, components of this. So one would be the management system. When you look at young people in schools, you want to, you know, because of the numbers, to have a robust system, you know, that will assist in terms of capturing, you know, those large numbers. You know, the issuing of the license, as you can see, the system can issue a license within less than five minutes, in actual fact. Now, the theory test, you know, in the video that you have, I mean, if time allowing us to show that, you've got more than 100 young people. The system is computer-based. You know, the computer will actually generate the question, so there's no human factor in terms of subjectivity and all of that. You know, at the end of the day, you know, people are tested, same standards, you know, they get, you know, their results on the spot. So it's online-based system. You go in there online, you register, you go in, it provides you with the time slots and all of that. You go in and write, you get the results. The practical test, you know, side of it is very interesting, you know, because when we're sitting down and visiting sites, we started comparing the way, you know, it's done in Korea compared to here. And, you know, there's a huge gulf in terms of, you know, obviously, you know, with these guys more, you know, into technology than us. You know, the practical test system, there's no human factor. You go to a test field, and this field, I can tell you, it has sensors, it has, you know, it has monitors, it has everything. So a person will go into one of the cars, drive around, and the inspector, whoever is sitting in the office, is not in the car, but the system is actually, you know, monitoring in terms of sensors. Whatever, if you're having difficulty in changing the gears, the system will pick that up, transfer that to the mainframe, and it's scoring, you know, etc. So you can take as many, you know, young people going through the test field. It can take up to 20, 30 simultaneously, you know, going through the system, and the system is actually through radio, you know, frequency communication. You know, it sends all the data into the server. By the time you get to the last part, by the time you finish, you're driving around the test field, your results are there. In fact, you actually, before you get out of the car, you know, you get a printout right there inside the car that says whether you passed or failed. Yeah. So there is no human factor, which is one problem that we're facing in South Africa, where you know corruption, fraud, and all of those things. So you have a system that is standardized that will, you know, fail you or pass you on the basis of capability, on the basis of what you are able to do, etc. Okay, and here, you know, the test system is actually broken down into various components, and this is what will appear on your mainframe, you know. In terms of the scoring, so the inspector will be sitting in the office and actually monitoring what is going there. There are sensors. This field has got sensors. If you are supposed to park in a particular way, a distance or whatever, it monitors the distance and it captures that information. And as you are driving, there's a display over there that shows you, you know, how you're scoring, etc. And this is the, you know, your gear sensors, as I was saying earlier on, as you're changing your gear, I mean, the sensor is actually telling the inspector in terms of scoring whether you're good in terms of changing your gears or you're not good, and then it will give you scoring in terms of that. If you're not supposed to touch, you know, your touch line or whatever, the distance sensor will then say, you know, this is
the distance that you actually use in terms of parking or whatever. And these are the other kinds of devices that are there. So as you can see, the objectivity and in terms of testing and all of that is sort of taken away from this. So as you know, I indicated earlier on, you know, that through this kind of system, you want to ensure that at the end of the day, whoever gets the license deserves to get a license, and you take away, you know, the problem of human factors. So it can actually accommodate, you know, different sizes in terms of vehicles and whatever. Now, the programming behind this, you know, these are the different aspects that, you know, from a ground testing perspective, these are different aspects that are incorporated in the, you know, how do you start, you know, when you get to the pedestrian crossing, what do? You know, do you cross the line, do you stand before the line, what's the distance the system is recording? But the point of the matter is that, you know, because this is the programmable part, we could then program this on the basis of what, you know, our needs locally. You know, what is it that we want the system to actually test and all of this. So we can customize in terms of our local needs. So this is the summary of the different components of this. Now also to mention that whatever is done in the theory test, in the registration, in the you know, yard test, as well as the road test. Everything is captured. We've got data that we can keep for many, many years that we can also refer to in terms of, you know, if we want to monitor, for example, people who have gone through the system against, you know, road fatalities. We can go back and say, how many of the people that have gone through this system have been involved in these kinds of, that kind of accidents? And thereby being able to go back to the system and sort of effect changes, you know, if necessary. This is the road testing system, which is semi-automatic, you know, and again with the road testing system, what then you know we normally do, there will be an inspector there. But the beauty of it again, to take the subjectivity side of things, you know, whatever is happening inside the car is actually monitored because there are cameras in there, you know, and you've got a touchpad here as the inspector is scoring. You know, the information is actually transferred to the server, to the main office. So, you know, whoever is the superior is actually looking at whatever is happening. So there is no, you know, way that a person can sit down and score in a subjective manner because it's actually monitored. So quality assurance at the end of the day. I mean, this whole information is stored and is kept for reference purposes as well as for future purposes. Now, if you look at that, you know, that's the Google Map, frame, meaning that in the office, you can also monitor where the inspector with the person who's been tested, where they are actually traveling, the route. If there is a specific route that needs to be followed, you can also, you know, see that, you know, they are following that particular route or they've decided to detour and go somewhere. You know, so the beauty of the system is the fact that it captures the data, it's automatic, you know, it's there for reference, points and all of this. Now, in terms of capacity, in Korea they're doing, you know, for example, in theory tests, they're doing close to more than 80,000 of these per annum, you know, and the practical tests, you can do as many, you know, depending on your needs, you know, and the issuing of licenses, again, the numbers are huge. So which means the system can in a very, you know, a proper way deal with, you know, the large numbers in terms of the groups that you're looking at here. This is one, you know, example of a yard that has been, you know, put together by Dongil with all the sensors, with all the technology, you know, to allow this capability of actually automating this kind of system. And on the right is the history of Dongil in terms of
the work that they've done in other countries, etc. These are the patents that, you know, from the research side of things that they've been, you know, able to actually to do. What I want to show you as the last part is the simulator, because, you know, one of the things that we do in this country, I mean, you go and write your Lennox, you pass your Lennox, your theory, and then all of a sudden you're right there, you're driving the car on the road, you know. And we don't take to mind the fact that, you know, we need to ensure that by the time you get to that stage, at least you have, you know, detailed knowledge in terms of what driving entails, what are the rules of the road, etc., etc. And using the simulator, you know, we can actually simulate an environment whereby you go and sit in front of the simulator. And this is an ideal, you know, situation, especially for learners, where you know, you're environmentally friendly, you're not planning, and if you and these guys are sitting in the simulator, they're practicing, you know, for hours, you know, and then once they reach a particular point, before they actually get on the actual thing, the actual vehicle, you get them to go through a particular number of hours on the simulator, and they write a test after that. Once they pass the test, then you put them on the road, where they actually get the real thing, the actual thing. So it goes with the simulator, and we're saying that for every, you know, a location where the system is located, you start with the simulator, you know, and then you integrate with the rest of the components. Now these are the plans going forward, you know, in terms of this. I don't know about if there's anything you want to say. Yes. Before, now these are the numbers that you can see the point that you were raising earlier on, that there was this, you know, increase in terms of, you know, vehicle registration and driver license, etc., etc. But look at this, you know, graph here, you know, which shows that when they started introducing the e-driver system, you know, there was 42% decrease in terms of deaths on the road. The number of traffic accidents, they decreased over this period of time by 28%, you know, which actually showed that the system was really, really, from a standardization point of view, from a quality assurance point of view, you know, from an objectivity point of view, the system was actually doing it. I mean, if technology can help us in terms of addressing many of these problems, I mean, why not? Let's get our people trained and be able and introduce this technology, you know, in the various areas.
Yeah, Madam Chair, honourable members, just to add, I think Dennis has covered everything in as far as the presentation, but I think there's just two things that I want to highlight in what the presentation was really about. You touched on this, Chair, that we've got a human element which is really about behaviour. And this system, as an interfacing system, touches on that in terms of how, through taking the learners or through taking people through the system, is going to be enhancing the behaviour in terms of when they get out. Because the system is flawless in terms of it's standardised. It is, in as much as it takes away a lot of the human element in terms of what happens, but obviously it means that those who get out of the system will be shocked, will be certain as a country that if learners have gone through the system, there's a particular standard that is going to be expected of them at the minimum. And that goes to the core of the behavior in terms of how they would have actually gone through with the simulator and the various tests in the system in terms of understanding road safety and many other elements which can be, you know, brought in. The other part is to say that in as much as the system was started in Korea, and as you've seen, it has also been exported to other countries, we feel that, and we are of the view that it can be integrated into this country as well, because it can work together with the current laws and current policies which are in place. Within you know, road traffic management and so on, with regards to assisting to ameliorate and to bring down the kind of issues that we are talking about. It could also go into public, you know, road as well, whereby, you know, the simulator, that's the beauty of it, because it assists people to actually go through, they can go through certain hours to practice and so on. And we feel that it really touches also on the behavior element, so that when they get out, at least there's a different and standard understanding of what they are expected to do. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chairperson and the members of the Portfolio Committee of Transport, thank you for the opportunity that has been afforded to us to make this presentation. Madam Chair, your emotional opening statement evoked some memories, painful memories to me. Because about 10 years ago, I also lost a member of a family through this carnage on the road. But what does this mean to us as South Africans? My view that it is that it means that we have a fight on our hands. We all have to fight this war on the road. Therefore, we here, Madam Chairperson, to present to you what we believe is a solution, but technology-driven solution that is aimed at assisting our country in reducing the road accidents and the carnage. And we believe that this is a tool that will support the Arrive Alive campaign. Our approach also is that please do not view us as service providers, but view us as partners, because this is a national program. We'd like to make a contribution to this national program. We will conduct our presentation in the following manner. As you can see, the objectives, prospective applications, the methodology, and so on and so forth. As has been said, I'm Hume Charlie. I represent the Voda Map, and these are my colleagues who will also make a presentation to assist in what we'll be talking about. Our objectives are as follows. We would like to present to you a technology that is self-policy. As we said, that our aim is to assist in the reduction of the fatal accidents and improve the road safety. We'd like to believe that this solution that we're proposing would also resolve the accident disputes, reduce the court and the prosecution time, because it is, as you will see later on, it is a real-time or management solution, or that produces a management tool or report. Reduction of road accident funds is important, and also with the insurance claims. I'm sure most of us are aware of the fatalities that happened quite recently, where a guy knocked off some runners, who were on the road. This, we believe, such a solution, as opposed to a system, a solution can help, in addressing, those fatalities from an insurance point of view and the road accident fund. Also, we know that we're living in a country where there are a lot of fraudulent activities, and we also of the belief that it will reduce, the fraudulent insurance claims. And as it was said by the researcher, pointing out at the behavior, and also the Madam Chairperson spoke eloquently about the question of changing the behavior of our people on the roads, and also including ourselves. We shouldn't also look at the drivers or the taxi drivers ourselves, the way we conduct ourselves on the road. So this solution is also for ourselves, in other words, all the human beings, we believe, in South Africa. We have the opinion that in terms of the prospective applications, you may call them customers, that we're looking to apply this technology-driven solution would be the following. Your public transport, the government vehicles, as you can see in the presentation or on the screen, we believe that these are the people who would need this solution. We hear Madam Chairperson, because we believe that this committee is the first point of contact that will, as you have pointed out, about the issues around, the budget, that, everything will have to start, here. And then the next slide, some more prospective application in terms of the public transport. The system can be used in the buses, the long-distance passenger coaches, as it has been said, the taxis, the buses, the entire transport system or transportation system in South Africa. could be a prospective application or can be applied in the entire fleet. Government vehicles, we would be looking at the police vehicles, emergency vehicles, and ambulances. Also designed to be installed in the city council, under city council or municipalities, your metro, traffic, police, emergency, vehicles. I think let me okay, you have heavy duty vehicles, all the transport companies there. Let me go to the next slide, the proposed methodology. Chairperson, we have said that the human factor plays an important role in these carnages. And it's important to admit that we have to look for a solution to these problems. And therefore, in our humble proposal is that we would need to bring in a technology, to assist us as humans in addressing this carnage or killing this carnage. Then I'm pleased, Chairperson and the members of the Portofia Committee, to introduce what we call a mobile digital event recorder. You could look at it as a black box for vehicles, as it happens or as it is installed in the black box for the aircraft. So that's what we'd like to propose as a solution to this carnage that is taking place. Why are we proposing this technology, ma'am? Because it has got some very, very significant benefits, which can be outlined as follows. The changes that this solution could have in the behavioral attitude of the driver. So it changes his or her behavior. It can also be used for driver training. It can be used, my colleague here would dwell on that, can be used for driver evaluation, and that can be used also to determine the driver accountability, and also be used for safe guiding of the driver. With such a technology, ma'am, some of the benefits, as I pointed out earlier, would also, because of the management report that a technology of this nature would bring out, it would also help to dispute, it help in the dispute resolution, the insurance, reduce those costs, the insurance, and it too, because of the report that comes out, from the system, we can be able to analyze, the accident that would have taken place. And record the moving violation evidence for court purposes. And again, some more benefits of the system would or the technology or the solution would be able to reduce the stock losses, reduce the vehicle abuse, because it's like policing type of technology. You could look at it. We don't want to say it's like a video camera, but it is a combination of all those things, because you are being watched as someone drives, in the car or on the road, and each and every action is being recorded, and reports can come out, and so real-time online type of a system. And also the promotion of the road safety and driver awareness. As I said, detailing the record, detailed record of rules, speed, and behavior, and approach. You want to see? I'm going to allow Carter to take over from here.
Good morning to you, Madam Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee, and other people attending. Again, thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to speak a little bit about the technical component of the proposal. One or two points that may be worthwhile making is to just understand that we are not promoting a specific product. The number of products available that can do different jobs for different tasks. We're talking about the concept and the appropriate type of technology that we're proposing in doing this. I also think that this is not a thing which will give you answers to all your needs, but it will certainly form part of a holistic approach to it, and it's a major component within that holistic approach. You've spoken about attitudes of people. I think from the points that we've already mentioned, you can see how this could have an effect, but I hope by the end of the presentation we'll have a much clearer indication of that. Roughly, the product can be, or the technology can be divided into two groups. The one is what we call standalone, and the other one is a fixed one. So the range in complexity, and for the various configurations and options, we have specific applications. So if there's a specific need where you need a much larger amount of data, it needs to be secured that people can't get to it, we will propose a particular type of approach, but it's the same technology, it's just the complexity of it changes. So fundamentally standalone, one that goes onto the windscreen, or fixed system that gets mounted in the vehicle. Specific type of approaches for specific sectors and for specific applications. Just some examples of what I've been talking about. Standalone units come in two types. It's got a camera that faces to the front. It's a single forward-facing camera. Or you get a unit that's got two cameras built into it that faces to the front and to the rear. So it will also record what's going on inside the vehicle. At this point in time, it sounds like it's only a camera system, but it's much more than that. Fixed integrated systems typically is the type of stuff which one would use on large commercial vehicles, maybe passenger buses, maybe police vehicles. You can have up to four cameras mounted in different places. They have a little monitor which you can see what's going on, and you can suit it to the particular application that you want to put it to. The unit will record the following. It will record video. It will also record audio. So in other words, conversations taking place within the vehicle can be recorded. Conversations, if a person has stopped, can be recorded. And in a police type environment, the conversation when the policeman walks over to the vehicle and it's been stopped can also be recorded. G-Shock is a sensor that's built into the unit, which records actions on behalf of the driver and the vehicle, which is out of the ordinary. In other words, if it brakes hard, if it accelerates fast, if it goes around a corner quickly, if it drives over the curb of a road, which would typically signify either reckless driving or abuse of the vehicle. Also recorded is the full GPS information of the trip. It gives you the location, the route, the speed, everything that goes with it, and I hope to demonstrate that just now. You can also set it up so that it will have an alarm which records the vehicle speed so that it can go off and trigger. You can connect other sensors to it as well, we said, such as events such as impact, door opening, lights, sirens, whatever. So whenever something that you've chosen should activate the system as an exceptional event, you can wire such alarms into it. Standalone single unit windshield mount, just a picture and an example of it. Standalone double unit, camera forward facing inside, windshield mount. Fixed mobile system, 3 to 4 cameras, just to give you an indication, one camera at the back, one camera inside, one camera forward facing, and also can do longer recording times than normal. You may activate an event by either continuously recording or by a panic button, which can be pushed. In other words, you're seeing a situation developing which you think could be potentially dangerous. You push the button and you then create an emergency event. Overspeeding, or if the impact sensor is affected one way or another, it will be recorded, or if lights are switched on, or whatever the case may be. In terms of
any of those events triggering the unit. The unit is programmed in such a way that when you push the button or the event happens, if there's a an accident type situation or an emergency button has been pushed, it will record the 3 minutes prior to the event. They can actually see how the event develops, and 1 minute, up to 1 minute after the event. They can actually see what happened after that. What is quite important is that events are locked in such a way that it cannot be removed or overwritten by other data unless the card is physically removed by an authorized person to do so. So it enables the viewer to ascertain what happened before the accident and directly after the accident. Uses solid state recording SD card that goes into it. Typically, you can have it continuously records, but at the point where it starts over recording over the previous stuff, it's typically 1 hour for each gigabyte, so 32 hours of continuous recording. If there's an event, that event will be fixed, and even though it is recording again over old stuff, it won't record over an event. So all events are kept on a permanent basis. You can have longer recording times depending on the quality that you set it to. The times that are now typically quoted as an example is where you set it to a very high quality. You will get a little memory stick or card which will show you the events. Typically, we'll try and put it up on the screen just now as a video clip where you can see the time of the event, the place where it happened. You go and click on it, it will play the event back to you. Okay, so typically you can benefit from the use of this box. Hughes already covered it. Police and law enforcement. But the type of unit that you would use for them would be different to that which you would use in a courier or in a person's private vehicle. Fire emergency, public transport, cash in transit, fleet operators, driving schools, couriers, and taxis. Yeah. Can be used as a driver training tool. Clearly, if you've got big transport trucks or buses, the owner can review it afterwards. You can sit down with the driver and say, have a look at what's going on here. And use it as a feedback tool in terms of how it's done. Can record moving violations for court evidence. Can assist insurance claims, reduce running costs and accident damage claims. Running costs, because any abuse where the guy brakes hard, accelerates fast, goes around the corner, goes over the pavement, that gets recorded. And all you need to do is if you look at the report part which you spoke about, it actually records it as an event, so you just look at all the events if you want to, and you can clearly see what happened there. So it promotes road safety and driver awareness. I can assure you, when that unit is in the vehicle, you're much more aware of the way that you're behaving than you normally would. Reduces stock losses and vehicle abuse, so it's got a benefit to businesses as well, where a vehicle might stop at an unauthorized stop, and where some of the stock might be removed for other purposes. Typically, you end up with a full set of analysis where you've got maps, which shows as the video plays the vehicle driving, it shows the route that he was taking, shows the speed of the vehicle, and it shows the incidents around that. You've got a full back office analysis tool, which can be used for the purposes which we've described previously, either for policing or driver training or whatever the case may be. So those are just examples in terms of the type of data that's captured, fundamentally what the screens look like. You can choose whether you want to blank out certain screens, whether you want to make them all available. But all that information is there, and this information can easily be converted to normal video. So when you view it on a laptop, quality is high. Excuse me, but you require a laptop. But if you use a very inexpensive little monitor, there's a program built in that comes with it that converts it to a video clip, which can be viewed on any type of monitor. So you can have instant viewing of the incident. You can actually have a monitor in the vehicle as well. Typically, some of the accessories which one would have with this type of product, you can have a full color in view vehicle monitors I've just described. You're going to have a tamper-proof security box. In other words, the part where the card is mounted in so that people can't tamper with it, they can't change the information on it. Weatherproof infrared cameras so that will actually record in the dark. And it's got an external microphone, and some of them even offer the facility where the external microphone is in the form of a portable wireless microphone. Madam Chair, if there's enough time and you will allow me, I would like to maybe just show one or two video clips in terms of demonstrating what the screen looks like. Technology unfortunately failed us, so it's going to be a bit of a different way of doing it. So if you can bear with me, I want to just show one clip typically of it being mounted in a truck. This was a real-time event. There was an accident and was recorded. And then I'd like to show you just one or two instances of where we've converted it to a normal video file, which you can look on a monitor, of a normal driving type incident and the attitude that you've referred to in terms of behavior. So if you'll just bear with me for 2 seconds, this is the part where everything always goes wrong. Okay. I'd like to show you this video clip. This is of a camera that was actually mounted inside a vehicle on the freeway. If we can get it to work. Okay. Let's hope that nothing stops. Of the incident itself. That's what it looks like afterwards with stuff in background. If we were to go back to that clip, you'll be able to see the speed. You can see the route that he's traveling. You see the time and date. And of that, you have a full analysis as well. So we'll check that well on the screen at the moment. Okay. And that's what that truck looked like after the little car drove into it. What I would like to do, if you allow me 2 seconds, I'm going to just randomly play a piece of video which was taken, and I'll show you some driver incidents, but just to demonstrate how you can actually see this. So we go to this is the memory stick that was in the unit. So we find all the dates, the times, and you'll notice that there's certain events that have triggered it. I'm not sure what we're going to see, so I'm just randomly going to click somewhere just to demonstrate this. I apologize in advance. Okay, that's definitely not where you want to be. So let's just find something else. A bit further. And this was inside a parking garage, and that's not going to be out there either. Let's just do this quickly. Okay, there the vehicle is going. We're traveling at the moment. I've blanked out the one screen deliberately because that's me in the one screen. We can actually now go onto the map and we can see where the vehicle is going. We can expand that map and either make it just a map or we can make it satellite only. I'll come up just now, I'll reload just now. Or we can make it hybrid, and we can zoom in whichever way we like. We go to the middle there, you'll see the speed of the vehicle. You'll see the direction of the vehicle. I've disabled the audio because I'm sure you don't want to listen to the conversation which I had inside the vehicle. And up there, you've got sensors that tells you how sharp the accelerated brake or whatever the case may have been. So it gives you a fairly full and accurate report. But you
make by just going to that little button there, you end up with a video clip, not of the same quality as we've got at the moment. So I will show you just one or two of those clips quickly, because you may find it interesting just in the normal experience of normal driving. So this one here is an incident of where in a residential area a vehicle overtakes my vehicle against a blind drive on a solid white line going around the corner at the top. I hope. Okay, I'll find it. Okay. That's because technology has failed us again, so if you'll bear with me for 2 seconds, I would like to just, if we think it takes too long, then I'll leave it. Area coming up to a stop street, stop at the stop street, turn right, speed limit in this residential area, going up a hill, and it was raining, so that's why you see the drop. Solid white line, as you can see, going round the corner, blind drive, and the next moment, the vehicle overtakes. So if it was an accident, it would have been a great opportunity to use this particular video. Going to have a look at another one quickly. Stop this one for the moment. This one's coming up to a stop, to a robot. You'll see the robot is orange. There's a turn right lane only and a turn left lane. Light is green, turns amber, the VSI stop. Vehicle starts entering the intersection. And you'll suddenly notice that that vehicle pulled off against the robot. But even worse, the next moment, the vehicle actually comes from the right turn lane only. You'll notice that those vehicles are now moving through the intersection. The vehicle comes on my right-hand side, where he should have turned right only if the light was in his favor. And he turns in front against the, yes, in front of me, and it goes into the red intersection. And one last one, maybe. This one is even more hilarious. I'm still parked there, wondering about this guy that's just gone past. And the next moment, also, we should have turned right only, and the light is actually against him. He comes and he turns right into the intersection, and he stops in the intersection. And he's got passengers on the back. And he now stands there because he can't enter the intersection. Okay, so finally, this happened at a traffic circle. I think we're all used to traffic circles where no one really cares too much about the real protocol of the traffic circle. Coming up towards the traffic circle, and I've deliberately switched the audio off because the language of the gentleman concerned, this is the first traffic circle, we go through it. The language of the gentleman concerned was not very complimentary. First of all, he got a big fright because he actually didn't realize. Coming up to the circle, entering the circle, you'll see a red car at the top, and the red car pulls off immediately in front. At that point in time, you'll notice that he now brakes. I sounded my hooter, and he then used the vernacular on us. You can see the speed, you can see the place, you can do the whole tracking of it. That's as much as I want to spend time on that, if we can get back to application itself, but just to demonstrate how this product, or not a particular product, but how this technology can be used and how it creates all the expectations that we've had from it. Just a comment in terms of this type of technology. It does provide opportunity to involve communities in terms of it, because there are fitment centers needed to install the product, and that one can do through existing channels, possibly with co-partnerships using Tracker and that type of fitment centers. Service and maintenance support supplies for the unit. Training and skills transfer to take place through that. We can offer an expert analysis consulting tool that the community can be trained on to use together with the training. And we say that the maintenance part and the installation part of this could become a community cooperative-based project approach, because the technology needs to be supported. I'm going to hand back to you.
Madam Chair, the next slide, maybe it's not very much relevant for this presentation. However, I'm just going to run through it because we are here to really talk about the concept. However, what we think would be a possible funding model could be self-funded, could be funded through regulatory means, through insurances, could be subsidized, through insurance discounts, or we could look at question of sponsorships and bundled offers. Madam Chair and the members of the Portfolio Committee, we can say a lot, 1,000 words, million words, but at the end of the day, we will have to, at some stage, prove this concept. It is important to put our money where our mouths are. And we'd like to propose, in line with my statement earlier, that not only just service providers, but we also partners to this national problem that is facing all of us, propose a situation where we would support the Arrive Live project, especially during the carnage season, that is the December period, where where there's a lot of deaths, and we see on TV, and authorities try their best to address this problem. Our attempt is to say, to be allowed, obviously, with the permission of the authorities, units, 10 units, for a trial run during this Arrive Alive period. Madam Chair would maybe guide us, give us guidance and advice on a possible area where this can be tried. But we'd like to humbly propose doing this trial run for 10 units and see this solution in action, because what we saw in this video clip, not I know when we see these videos, it sounds like a joke, but it's not a joke, because people can die, from these mistakes, and human errors. So we're proposing that that will be at no cost to, DOT. From where we are, our expectations are as follows. It's imperative that we prove this concept to support the initiatives and the policies of the government, partnering with the Department of Transport. We believe that one of the best ways to, in terms of moving forward, is to create a regulatory a framework, environment, regulatory framework, meaning that the introduction of a technology as a solution that will help us in this fight against the road deaths. And then we also to suggest, you know, we could identify, agree, and implement a project. Yes, ma'am, maybe this is not the forum to discuss this, but it's just our humble way of saying, you know, we you know, you could look at, you know, things like that and develop a suitable funding model for each different categories and sectors. And at some stage agree on an action plan, could be in a form of a triple P with all the, you know, other service providers. And finally agree on a proposed rollout plan. Man, we thank you so much for the opportunity that has been given to us to make this presentation, and we would like to be open for any questions or queries. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the last presenter. Yes. I'm talking through the notes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. Good morning, folks, to honorary members of the Portfolio Committee. My apologies for not having a slideshow, but I think the brief that we got from the committee was not to expect to have a long presentation today at all, but rather that we will certainly look at Madam Chair, your idea of the workshop for next year in February, perhaps, and I think we could probably do this subject a lot more justice there. So I have prepared a written submission for your consideration, and I will leave the original with you so we can actually just put it on record. I know that time is always in a session like this, it's always very limited, so I'll keep my comments fairly brief. I'm not going to read through the whole document. Safe to say that when looking at an overview of road safety in South Africa, there are a number of issues. We've probably identified at the AA more than 20 or even 25 critical issues that actually need to be addressed within what's the road safety environment in South Africa. I'm just going to pull out a couple of those. The most important one, I think, is the United Nations Decade of Action. Where do we stand on that? Where are we going on the Decade of Action? We have, for a long time now, had a split responsibility between the Department of Transport, the Ministry, the DG's office, and, of course, the Road Traffic Management Corporation as well. And the lines clearly are not clearly defined, even after 10 years of or thereabouts, of working separate working. We'll be still finding an unacceptable level of duplication of effort, and we understand that the RTMC is seen as the lead agency for road safety in South Africa. What we're not seeing is the implementation of action plans other than as a really good job in terms of enforcement. There's quite a lot of places where this where it needs to be picked up on. And that is, as an oversight committee, I think that's the work of this body to actually ask those questions. Where are the action plans? We have the strategy. We need to take that forward. If we're going to meet anywhere near the target of a 50% reduction of crashes, and there is an anticipated report back forum to the United Nations in 2015, we need to have done something in the next 3 years to actually start making a big difference. We saw what the research showed earlier. It's not significant. It really is not significant enough to actually have made a difference. Right. As part of the data collection, we would urge the RTMC and the Department of Transport to start re-reporting the levels of injuries that are actually occurring in crashes. And I've heard that call in a previous presentation here. If you just look at if we don't use the old, and I do realize this is old data, it is from the CSIR, it is used almost exclusively in research, at the cost per incident, in other words, how much does it cost if one person, or if at a fatal crash? What is that cost? Well, we don't know. We know what it was in 1998, so if we've used a modeling process to do the mathematic modeling, it currently stands at 2009 value at 1.23 million per fatal incident. We've used some data that goes to suggest that the cost of crashes to the South African economy is not 14 billion. It is not 44 billion. It is not 60 billion. It's probably closer to 140 billion, Madam Chair. And I'm quite happy to send to your office the workings that would suggest that. Now, contrary to any other valid information, that is what we have to work with. Okay, so when it comes to evaluating the extent of the problem, evaluating the success of action plans, this is a very vital tool, and we need that information. If we've had also a very highly publicized number of public vehicle crashes since August this year. Madam Chair, I think it is beyond time that pressure needs to be put on from this committee, from the honorable members of the House, to the legislators, the people that are drafting the regulations, to seriously bring in periodic vehicle testing. It has to happen. In 2012, it has to become effective. Similarly, we need to relook at the conditions under which the certificate of fitness tests are done for public vehicles, both carrying goods, dangerous goods, and people. We need to move away from a time-based test, rather use a mileage-based test. I think that would be a lot fairer. I mean, if you take your average privately owned vehicle does 20 to 25,000 kilometers in a year, a public transport vehicle can do that in 3 months. So maybe we need to use the 30,000 kilometers as a benchmark, perhaps. We'll leave that to the experts to do. And similarly, when it comes to the reissuing and issuing of professional driver permits, we need to have a look and see at why these permits are not issued on an evaluation basis rather than an administrative basis. My point on this is quite simple. People get older, they do not, and yet their physiological changes are not measured as part of the evaluation, neither is their driving skills. So we need to go back to that and to see if that can be done. Madam Chair, there is another issue around the cost of our infrastructure, roads, our budget. Treasury indicated to me earlier this year that the money garnered from the fuel levy constitutes almost 30 billion in 2010. Still with a deficit, it shows us that of 6 billion that the MTEF was sufficient to cover that. However, one of the biggest issues that we have as the Automobile Association is that the appointment process of the contractors who do the work results in the country only seeing the benefit of a quarter of that treasury allocation. Simply put, the same job has to be done 3, 4, or 5 times. Each time the contractor is paid for that work before it is finally done to an acceptable level. I think oversight on this might not fall within the realms of this particular committee. It might be a combined responsibility of Treasury as well. Madam Chair, also, I have to, because we are the AA, I have to also still put on record our opposition to the
concept or the idea of any peri-urban or urban toll. We still believe that should be funded through alternative means, and tolling should be left as a last resort. And I will not say any more. Our data out for you is quite clear. And a last idea is that we need to bring everybody into the mix as far as road safety is concerned. We have spoken about government. We've spoken about the private citizen. What has been left out is business. And we are proposing that a very easy, short way of implementation, or reporting, shall we say, is the implementation of a workplace injury reporting system, which would actually achieve two things. One, it would show the accountant, the CEO, the MD, and the board of each company the extent of their lack of road safety in their own organization, what it costs them on their bottom line. Okay. Secondly, by implementing a policy in the workplace on traffic safety or adherence to traffic law, would promote safer road usage by the employees and the immediate families. That has been the experience in overseas countries that have implemented this. So how do we do this? A very simple reporting structure on an annual basis to transport through a web-based application, much like DPEE or equity reports. Madam Chair, we have that available, a project like that, with everything pretty much done. I'll be handing Logan Maestri a copy of that tomorrow. Excuse me. Madam Chair, the AA looks forward to working with government on a continued basis. I know we are often in a position that we are seen to be criticizing government. That is not the intention. The intention is always to bring to government's attention what could potentially be shortfalls, and where we do definitely like to work with them. So I look forward to contributing at the workshop next year, and thank you very much for allowing us the opportunity to talk. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir, to all the presenters. I will be opening an opportunity for comments, but I also want to explain one thing that you would have noticed that we don't have a department representative in this presentation, and it was intentional, so that we engage as a portfolio committee with the people that are proposing possible solutions without having the department to tell us how good what they are doing is. We want to have a free state of mind that assists us as lawmakers to look at the follow-up action. The plan is that in the first quarter of next year, we need to revisit this, because today we didn't have enough time to, we will not have enough time to get into the issues. But we are opening today a can of worms to say, let us look what is inside this can. And are we having this problem because there are no possible solutions? Or we are having this problem because we have not moved with speed to look at the possible solutions, so that when we get into the workshop, next year, we would then have conducted again a further research, and also we will be able to line up the presentation on the basis of the issues that have been raised here today. And some of the letters that I receive in my office from people that are raising issues but also proposing possible solutions, because that is how I also got all these people that are invited here. They specifically wrote to me to say, we are concerned with this and we have these possible solutions that we can offer to the government of South Africa. So I will now open an opportunity for members to ask questions of clarity and also comment on the approach to say, are we doing the wrong thing to engage with on this issue? I have recognized the Honorable Faro, Honorable De Freitas, Honorable Shagute. Thank you. In that order.
Chair, first of all, I would like to commend you for bringing this call, some technocrats around the table today to discuss means of saving one life, because one life is too many. And we are not technocrats here, though, and that is my point of departure. I think that what should happen, and I don't know whether it's right to exclude the department, because having been through this process before in many years in these type of presentations at the Portfolio Committee, and I'm sure my colleague, Gary Ronald, who's been to many of these presentations in the past, will recall that what is needed is a workshop, just like you suggested. And at that workshop, these ideas and these technologies and these innovations, which all contribute to the whole of saving a life, need to be tabled effectively and go through some form of technical scrutinization. Now, if the department was here, they would tell the gentlemen that have presented their presentations here today that there is a technical committee which deals with matters of safety in the department, like licensing, for instance, and the procedures that are followed vis-a-vis the theoretical computerized system that is enforced in the country, in the terms of implementation of certain technologies like daytime running lights. And that technical committee, I don't know, maybe Mr. Ronald can help me, used to come and report to us in terms of those technologies and innovations in order for the CSIR and SABS, which are two very key players in this process, to be able them to become part and parcel of a regulation. And once that regulation then is passed by that department, and this is why I say it's integral to the department, then, you know, a follow-up can take place in terms of our oversight role to see whether, A, people have been implementing the particular regulation and enforcing the regulation, and more importantly, in ensuring that those people that have brought those innovations to the table, products have seen the light of day. Now, I think that the workshop will possibly bring all that to the fore, Madam Chair, so I don't want to go into debating the merits and demerits, as I see it, of this particular process, other than to say that it will be unfortunate that we will go to that workshop after the Christmas period. And it's a good job that Collins is here, because I think not only did I hear it from Gary Ronald, but I think that the importance of statistics in determining what we need to do in combating road deaths is key to this exercise. And we haven't seen statistics in this portfolio committee, let me tell you, for, well, certainly since you've been in the chair, madam, that have been brought to us and should be brought to us annually. So we can act on them, and we can actually make sure that there's a process in place that where those accidents are occurring, there's law enforcement and all those very various matters, or if there's a problem with the environment, the road, that we get SANRAL to act on certain aspects of that. And I'm afraid our hands are tied. We can't act unless we have those statistics. And it's disturbing to note that, you know, the researcher, parliamentary researcher, has presented something today, which, as far as I'm concerned, is very good effort, and I appreciate what Sufisa has done in gathering what he can. But he was scratching like a hen, let me tell you, like we all do,
in trying to find these bits and pieces here and there. And that is not satisfactory, Madam Chair, I'm afraid to say. We need to have those things very, very carefully and clearly defined, how the accident happened and what injuries are occurring. Because there's a big discrepancy, and if you listen to the Minister's speech when he spoke in the last budget debate, he talked about 54 billion. That's the figure I have in my head. Sofisa talks about 14 billion, and Mr. Ronald behind me talks about 140 billion. Now, if the economy is costing that much, what is it then in terms of bringing in some of these technologies to try and improve things? Really, it's a drop in the ocean. So I'd appreciate that we do have that workshop as soon as possible, with the knowledge that when we go to that workshop, we will have accurate statistics for the various years. And let's not talk about Christmas, Easter. You know, as far as I'm concerned, road safety is a year-long, day-by-day exercise. And we're all passionate about it. I don't think there's anyone in this room that wants to see another death caused by any reason other than the fact that we should be taking heed about what we see. So, you know, we talk, oh, Arta, we produced that law. And yet that thing is sitting there and not one demerit point has been issued to anyone. We still have not seen the pilot projects that were promised to this house when they were completed to come and be presented to us. They've been held very close to the chest. I happen to know what a lot of those things say in that report. And until such time we get those things presented, how can we go ahead seriously and start rolling out OATA, which is key to the safety program in this town? I'd also like to, as a matter of course, Madam Chair, and I think you mentioned it in your introduction, to go and see, because seeing to me is believing. I would like to see some of these devices in operation, maybe drive with one and see how it affects and how it can assist behavior, not only of the person that's got it installed, because it's exclusive to the individual, but to those people that are cutting across you, because they're the people that should be reported to the cops for bad driving. And as far as my colleagues here are concerned in terms of their driving test, I'm very much in favor of trying to get that professionalized in some form. But we've got to go and see it and see what it actually means to this country and how it can be effectively implemented. I'll leave it there on the basis that I'll be talking a hell of a lot more if we get to that workshop, because I've got a list of really important things that I need to raise as an oversight role, as a parliamentarian, very concerned about what happens over Christmas and Easter and all through the year in this country. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Some of the things have been covered by my colleague, but I'll just go through each of the things. The first is, on the first presentation, thanks very much to our researcher who's done a fantastic job. I agree that this presentation should have been done by the RTMC. It says here, and Honourable Farrow mentioned that in the presentation, it says as well, the festive season figures for 2010 and 2011 are not available. That's of concern. It's something that I've mentioned in my budget speech last year and the year before. We're not getting basic information. So I'd like to perhaps find out, when are we going to fix this problem? This kind of information statistics should be available within 6 weeks. As an international norm of these statistics becoming to reality. Then it was also mentioned with the cost to the economy. My figure I had was 54 billion. The presentation says 14 billion, and the AA says 100 and something odd billion. Either way, it's a lot of money. We need to maybe just clarify that. Then it talks about in the same presentation, road safety strategies. And I'd like to know, and it talks about Arrive Alive. Well, as far as I can see, Arrive Alive has effectively collapsed. And the informants I have in the various entities tell me that there have been instruction even in some quarters not to even do Arrive Alive. Well, if Arrive Alive is not being done, what is in its place? And the result is, I'm saying pretty much nothing, because the results are showing. End of each year, we see our figures going up, our death statistics keep on increasing. So that's proof that there's no strategies in place, and whatever is in place is simply not working. Just going through each presentation because I don't want to miss any questions. In the presentation, it was very interesting to read here that it says the DOT has stated the National Rail to ARTO, and the points demerit system will be announced in due course, or perhaps Savisa has information that none of us have. And when is that going to happen? Because if that is the case, then also he talks about there's been strengthened partnerships with various departments like health, social development, education and police. I'd love to know a little bit more about that, because it's a very general term, so perhaps some specifics would be interesting. And then the DOT, the next page says, the DOT is improving its data and reporting of road fatalities and injuries. Well, please, if you could tell us where this improvement is, so I'd love to see that. Then there's also, it says the DOT is embarking on a massive education and communication campaign. That's good news. Perhaps we can get more information on that. And then it's talking about here that every grade 11 learner will have a learner's license and every 18-year-old have a driver's license. I'd like to have some more information about that, because firstly, we might find some of these young people are not competent enough, depending on their competency, to be at that level. You might find that an 18-year-old is not ready to have a driver's license. And to paint every child in the same brush is very dangerous. So perhaps I'd be interested to hear more about that, because I'm presuming Sophisa is getting this information from somewhere, so it'd be great to have this information. Then it talks about is there any progress in his presentation. It says the interventions have yielded positive results. Perhaps you could tell us what those positive results is, because when it comes to road safety in South Africa, I'm very depressed and gloomy about it all, because I don't see any improvement. And then it talks about the conclusion, pedestrian safety should always be borne in mind when considering road safety. I think the problem is that with pedestrian safety is the lack of education with regards to pedestrian safety. And I see no pedestrian education programs. Then onto the presentation by Dongle Electronics. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. The presentation is very impressive. It's the kind of thing that Honourable Farrow and I have been lobbying for a long time. We need to use technologies and interesting innovations that exist internationally that have worked, proven to work, without us having to reinvent the wheel to try and take the best of what other technologies exist and adapt it to our area, to our circumstance. There are a few questions I'd like to ask. I'm not sure who would be able to respond, but with regard to this, and that is, in areas, in places where, in our country, where there are no electricity and there are no computers, how would such a system function? Where we have rural people, you know, real rural areas, we can't expect our people to then travel 200 kilometres, hypothetically, to a testing station, for example. It would be unfair. Someone like me, who's a city person, can easily get into my car and travel 10 kilometres to a testing station. How would we accommodate people who are in the middle of nowhere that would want to get to a station but don't have the means or the finances or whatever the case is? How would that be accommodated? Then it talks about, this is just for information, I'm not criticizing, I just want to see how it would work in South Africa, because I think these are great innovations. Then I'm just trying to find a note for page 8. On page 8 you talk about on these various controls and how the actual the field test takes place. My question is, can the actual computer and the functioning of it all not be tampered with? Because I see there is human intervention where someone is actually sitting in a nearby office, I guess, observing it all. Can that person not tamper it in any way? And the reason why I'm asking that is because what I find very exciting about this system is that it takes away the human error and all the corruption that is associated and is rife at the moment in our testing stations. So if we could just have a little bit more information about that, you might not be able to give me the actual detail right now, and I'm happy to receive it later. Then also, it appears to me that I'm guessing that a special vehicle will be required. So I'm guessing that, am I correct in saying that part of the system would be a vehicle that is specially made to be part of the system? Is that the case? And the last question I have is why... It appears that everything's automated. Why do you need someone sort of on the fringes at all? Because it talks about when you're doing your test, if I understood correctly, when you're doing your test, you have someone who's then sort of watching the whole process. What is the objective of having that human intervention at that stage? that's for that presentation, and then on. I'm sorry, Chair. I'll try and rush. I don't want to take up too much time. Really, what I'm asking on the next presentation, this by Ms. Charlie. Thank you very much for the presentation, and that is in the video clips that you showed us. These vehicles were moving very fast. The ones that were contravening various rules. And I tried to very hard to try and find the registration number, for example, because that would be a very good law enforcement mechanism. Can you talk about that? Because it seems that you're not able to do that. Besides it being, and it may sound like I'm criticizing, but I'm not. Besides the nice to have, where you can catch somebody who's being, you know, who's contravening and so forth, as Joe blogs, unless it's an official policeman or a traffic officer, it won't be much use to just this person driving. So it would be very useful for the law enforcement. But where law enforcement officials, but things like little things like finding the registration number, can you assist with that? And how does it really, besides nice to have, I'm trying to understand, how is it good for myself to have such a mechanism? I understand why a police officer or traffic officers would have, be very good. But how would it be useful for someone like me, besides getting very angry and frustrated at seeing someone sort of cut in front of me and so forth? And then I don't really have much more on the AA presentation. A lot of things are very interesting, and I think they continue to do a very important and valuable job for us. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you. We've been sitting for a very long time. Some people are asking for a comfort break. Can we have a comfort break for 10 minutes, and be back here at 10 past 12 so that we can then respond to these questions and agree on the way forward?
Okay, so Thank you. Thank you.
thank you. I think before I need to present up to respond, I want to address some of the issues raised by the members who have spoken to further clarify the purpose of this meeting and also to distinguish from the presentation that is given to us to assist us develop a strategic approach in finding solutions. How the questions you ask if you are dealing with a presentation that is to assist you as a portfolio committee to arrive at a strategic approach would differ from the questions that you would ask when you are holding the department accountable. Because I think that some of the questions are asked as if we are addressing such questions to the department and RPMC. Today we are not holding anyone accountable. We are empowering ourselves. We are empowering ourselves in terms of understanding the nature of the problem that we are dealing with and the possible solutions before we even get to the workshop, so that we are then able to structure our workshop in a manner that will lead us to the correct decision that we have to make in the workshop, and then use that information to do two things. Hold the department and RPMC accountable, but also influence a policy direction at a parliament level as well as a department level, so that come the time of the budget review recommendation process, we are very clear of the strategy that we want to effect. So I just wanted to clarify that today we are not holding anyone accountable. We are actually empowering ourselves. All these people that are presenting here are people that are saying the problem that you are identifying and dealing with is not different from the problems that we identified in different countries at a particular time. And also, as the world evolved, this is how then science and technology has responded to such problems. That is what we are doing here. Even the research the report that has been presented to us by our researcher, the objective of that today is not to question whether what the cost of the accident are 15 billion and the source of that information is what, and on the another piece of information, it's 56 billion, and the source of information of that, and another presenter says it's 140 billion, and different source of information. What that tells us is that there is a cost incurred when we have fatal accidents. We are not dealing with the accuracy of the information today. And if we discover that there is inaccuracy, that again should form part of our strategic response to that issue that ends. The magnitude of the problem is such that we can't even have accurate information, because in one presentation we got different statistics. We should not be asking why you are saying it's 15 billion and why you are saying it's 56 billion and the other one is saying 140 billion. What that should tell us is that there is even a problem in terms of information gathering and verification of that information. And that should then form part of our strategy in responding to this issue. Because to me, the 16 billion was a scary figure. And I get more scared if another source of information is saying 56 billion and another source of information is saying 140 billion. And I'm not going to worry myself as to which information is accurate. I am going to worry myself about the fact that our responsive strategic approach should then deal with that, because it indicates that there is even a problem in terms of having a verifiable information. So, questions about the arrive alive, I don't want anyone to respond to that, because that's the main reason, that is part of the reason we are here. That we have had intervention, and those, we continued to experience this problem. 16,000 people are still dying when we have this intervention. So we're not going to question the issue of the arrival life, and no one can answer that here because we don't have the department here. But also I want members to ask to be sensitive and remember that we can't punish this young man, Mr. Collins. Because Mr. Collins is a caretaker of an ailing agency. Collins is an official employed by the Department of Transport. He's not a CEO of the RTMC. He's actually there to take care of an ailing child. So we can then ask him and punish him for what he found, which was already a disaster. We should be working with him to try and find solutions of how to fix what we found there. And this process is a process that is aimed at assisting this young man. So I am also not going to allow him to respond to the situation that was not created by him. The only questions that you can then respond to are questions that are about the system, how the system works. It's also the ideas that would lead us to a follow-up action. And in my view, the follow-up action is a workshop where we spend a much longer time so that we can begin to identify the problem and understand the magnitude of the problem so that we can then move and say, because the problem is this huge or the problem is this small, therefore we need to effect this type of a response. And also the reason I invited this is I carefully selected them. The Digital Connect and the Dongle, they are approaching from an education perspective. We want to produce people, drivers. We want to effect a system that will produce drivers that are professionally qualified. And we are saying to you, there is a system that deals even with fraudulent issue of driver's license, human error, and those things. So it is a presentive type of a solution. You want to produce good drivers in the future. The voter map is saying you already have people that have been issued with licenses, they are not respecting the law. And we have a system that can effect, there is a system in the market that can effect self-policing. And what I understood from what was presented was that that system changes the behavior of the driver because it works like a black box. When an aeroplane has crashed, they don't look for any other things. They look for the black box because the black box has got all the information, the number of the flight, how it was driven, what was the speed, what was the behavior of the captain, what was happening inside the flight. And my understanding then is that what I heard from the presentation was that there are cameras that are recording what is happening around the vehicle in the vicinity, which will assist in dealing with the dispute. But there's also there's another camera that is recording what is happening inside the vehicle. And if the driver is drinking while driving, this camera is also recording that. And now, if I am driving and I know that there is an instrument that is recording me, and even if I am not seen by any policeman, 10 days after I have committed that offense, I can still be stopped and then this black box can be still checked and I can still be held responsible. I will change my behavior. So, that is what I had. What I have said in the past in this committee that telecommunication is a skill. Very important skill. There's the sender of the message and the receiver of the message. And then the receiver of the message will process the message and interpret the message. And in most cases, the receiver of the message comes to a different interpretation to what the sender of the message was saying, which is why it is also important to paraphrase, to say, I heard you saying this. That's what you said. So there are questions that do not belong here that were raised. And there are only two questions that belong here. Does the system show the registration number? And does the system help an individual other than a law enforcement agent? and then can the system, this site, work in an area where there is no electricity? But even that should not be a question to you, because it is our responsibility to provide electricity. And if we want that system to be deployed there, we should find ways of providing electricity in that area. So it should not be your problem. It should be the problem of the government. It is the responsibility of the government to provide the infrastructure that is required to deal with the problems that this country is faced with. So I will then take more questions, because there are only two or three questions that were asked that are relevant to the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate the presentations that were made here by the presenters. I think I will not repeat what you said, because in your input, there were things that I wanted to raise in the same vein. Looking forward, we should be developmental, as a developmental state, finding more ways in finding solutions to the challenges that are facing us. You know, Chairperson, the issue of the black box, I think it was explained very clear here, and I think you also repeated that, how it works, because some people might not know the understanding of the black box. They might think that it's around the cruise craft. Very less interpretation. Yet it is, or so much information to that. I just want to check from the issue of this black box. Are we saying then that the manufacturers in the country on those four mobile or two-wheeled vehicles, they should be installed at the level of manufacturing our vehicles, so that each vehicle does this kind of black box, despite I'm not sure, I'll not go to the cost of that and the lifespan going forward with the vehicle. Is it a motorbike? Because I would assume it will apply to motorbikes on everything else that is driven. the other issue that was raised here, in fact, Chairperson, it means, you see, I'm looking at the level of our educational system. This is especially South Africa, the developing state. This is the first world. And now the model has been looked into, the best practice from Korea, South Korea, some of these matters, of which I appreciate. But to me, I'm still grappling on the methodology of introducing it in our schools, because our curriculum does not speak that much in that respect. So surely a dynamic interaction between transport, education, science and technology, so there should be a dynamic interaction so that everybody has got a buy-in on this technology that wants to be introduced in the country. Because really, we are longing for any solution that might reduce the fatalities of our country. And also beyond that, I think we've got three spheres of government, and of which we are at this level. Surely it has not evaded my mind that the other two spheres of government should be brought into play, so that a thorough presentation is made, because transport cuts across, especially when it comes to the enforcement of the laws at the local level. So it means then that this workshop should be broadened to be like inclusive of many vital, important role players, especially the implementers. I know a design and interaction at the government level ministerial level will be ensued. But surely we should also, as we take it from the initial start, stage, we should take everybody along so that everybody does understand our concept. It's not just here. It should go beyond that. That's why I say I appreciate this approach. A comprehensive approach is needed in terms of what I'm trying to say. Because all others, if you put our systems in right, funding and everything else will follow based on a comprehensive plan for the reduction. Because these three presentations, I leave out the research is ours. We can always interact with him at any given time. But the three other presentations, surely they need to find one another so that we see where do we find synergy, common approaches, so that we don't repeat too much. And also we should be driven by time factor, because people are dying outside whilst we are talking. This matter has been coming for quite some time, but surely now that we've got yourself, people have traveled and experienced, we should move with a little bit of speed, and especially when there's a buy-in, the government. You see, the training that they are talking about, I was just talking to myself because this issue of the field, what do you call it, where the testing stations are. Test centers that go with this thing that you are driving, that you are sitting.
Yes.
Are we saying it should be in all municipalities of our country? Because each and every testing station will have that kind of a technology. Remember, the better part of our people are in the rural area to come to the cities and become drivers, because they will cut across once they have got that. I was saying then that the entire country should have this kind of a technology so that we reduce these fatalities. One presenter, I was making a presentation, maybe I'll ask it later, that where are these hotspots mainly in terms of the research? Where is this, if you say Eastern Cape or KZN or whatever, where is the, in the KZN or any other province, where is this high rate that embarrasses us all the time? So I'm saying maybe I'll park that for another stage, another time, so that when we talk statistics, we zoom in more accuracy in the place where these facilities take place. Otherwise, thank you, Shepherd. I'm pleased.
So, what your area? What I want to share with the presenters is that in the ANC component of the portfolio committee, we allocated areas of responsibilities to certain members. I know that it is the case with the DA. We know that when we are debating, the person who would come with statistics from the DA is Honorable De Felter. And Honorable Faro is responsible for technologies that exist because he has an engineering background. The same applies to the ANC component. We have divided ourselves to according to how the department is structured. And Jabuda is responsible for traffic management, so it's her area. Thanks, Chair. I want to appreciate the presentations made here, because all of us, we are really disturbed by the high rate of accidents that we have on our roads every day. So most of what I wanted to say, Jefferson, you said a mouthful, so I don't think I should waste time on this one. Also, I wanted to come in the defense of the RTMC, that we cannot say anything about the RTMC today, because we all know the situation in the RTMC. Also that we, as a portfolio committee, Shepherdson, we welcome the fact that you decided to invite the presenters today to come and present to us, and this thing will also help us, the presentation will give us enough time before the workshop, the strategic workshop, so that we can go through these documents in our own time and understand better what is it that they presented to us today. So with those few words, Chairperson, I want to just to thank this whole presentation, and also hope that maybe they will assist in ensuring that we don't lose more lives on our roads. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I will then give to the presenters to respond to questions raised and comments made.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. I will try not to bore the committee with too much technical detail. Suffice just to say that, first of all, within the time span that we've had, a lot of information was presented. So it's not always possible to cover every element, and it's also possible that some of the information could have been lost in the translation. And that's just a free quote on my bell. The questions that were asked are of a technical nature, which I can respond to, and it's quite important to maybe just bear the presentation in mind when we started off with it. First of all, this technological approach is only a component of a holistic plan. And you were, in fact, correct in referring to those that already are driving, and that's not going to be getting the benefit of a new licensing system. So from that particular perspective, I think it's important to also understand, and I'll respond to the question in terms of at what point does this technology get fitted, but it's also important maybe to just remember that we broke down the presentation and we said that there are different applications for the technology. One end is police and metro police, traffic police, where their need and requirement is very different to that of a normal, let's call it citizen, who has this unit fitted because of insurance purposes. And therefore, we referred to the fact that there were different products available and that those products were chosen or fit the specific need that we referred to. The clips which I showed you were taken over afternoon and in the evening. It was the lowest spec camera. One of the comments on that particular approach is that, first of all, that wide-angle lens is meant to give you what you've referred to as the view outside and next to the motor car. That application would be different when you have a police vehicle. On the police vehicle, you've got multiple cameras, and some of those cameras could be chosen with different types of lenses so that they're not wide-angle, and therefore you can see the number plate. For the purpose which it's generally used in terms of, let's call it for passenger buses or for private vehicles, it is to understand what happened around the vehicle and what was the conditions around it. So the detail of the number plate does not become an issue in that particular respect. But the color of the vehicle, the direction of travel, the speed, everything else which is being recorded is in fact there. Also, the quality of the video can be set so we can slow it down and speed it up so that it affects what people see on the screen. And those were converted images from relatively bad lighting conditions. So I'm not making an excuse. I'm just saying that that type of product would not be the type of product that you would fit into a law enforcement vehicle where you need a different type of resolution. But in terms of insurance, in terms of driver accountability, in terms of stock losses, in terms of accident resolution, driver safeguarding, that type of stuff, that camera is more than adequate for performing the job. But let's remember, we said there are different technologies for different applications. So we would evaluate what is the requirement and the need in a particular environment, for that environment, we would suggest a specific type of technology, not specific product, but the type of technology to go with it. This was basically today to say there's a technology available that will allow self-policing to a great extent, which will reduce costs. And the question was actually asked by the gentleman. Okay, there we go again. The question was actually asked by the gentleman, what's the benefit to me as a normal driver? I think, again, look at the different sectors. Because when you've got a bus, the need will be different on a bus to the need of a policeman. The need of me will be different because I've been told by the insurance company or by a regulation that I have to have that in my vehicle. So it will be a different application, different unit, and therefore the issue that goes around it will in fact change as well. So maybe just to answer that question, different products for different applications, and the purpose really which we started off with, can we influence the behavior of the driver? Okay. So I think a point was made this morning which we may inadvertently have just accepted as being normal and part of it, and that point was it's not just about fatalities, it's also about injuries. Okay. So I think anything that we can do that will contribute towards understanding what is going wrong, and those clips that I showed you, they were literally taken within a few hours. There are four major events within a few hours immediately around the house that I drive in. I deliberately took out the part where myself and the passengers in our car. But you could actually see my behavior and the passenger's behavior in the car as well. Whether we had seatbelts on, whether we were on the cell phone, whether we were busy with something else. So from that point of view, regardless of the resolution of the number plate, it serves the purpose that we require. There are units available that will take it to the level of law enforcement that allows you. Although you couldn't see the number plate, you could see the type of vehicle, you could see the speed, you could see the time, you could see the place on the map, and you could see the color, and you could see the transgression. That really is all that's needed in that particular situation. So I'm not sure whether it answers all the questions, but I think the key to this is how do we affect driver behavior so that we can just save another one person of not being injured, never mind being killed. And the technology is there for all the different levels. Thank you.
In terms of the questions that were directed at DigiConnect and Dong, I just want to start with the simulator location, which was asked by an honorable member there. You know, with the recession, you know, that we're experiencing at the moment, I mean, you can just imagine in rural areas and poverty-stricken areas how many people can really afford to go and pay a certain amount per hour to actually to go and do, you know, practice, you know. So I see, and that's the reason why I wanted to start with this question, I see this innovation as one way of actually addressing that serious problem, that, you know, many people might actually, you know, reduce the number of hours, you know, for practicing before they actually go to the testing because of the affordability issues. And here's a simulator where you don't actually have to pay for any gas or anything. You switch this thing off, it's a car, you know, in the true sense of the word. It's just that, you know, it's not mobile in that sense. It's only mobile from a monitor point of view. So this is really, you know, a typical example of technology actually coming in and assisting, you know, in this kind of an environment. In terms of where it should be located, you know, all over in all municipalities, you can imagine how many people will spend so many hours. A typical example is the airline industry. You know, you're compelled to go to that simulator and do so many hours because that's one way of doing this practice in a way that is cost-effective. I see this as an ideal opportunity for South Africa as a developing country to actually to use, you know, this technology to ensure that we spend many, many hours actually getting into, you know, practicing and all of that. In terms of, you know, deploying in areas with no electricity, I think there is capacity for that,
you know, as much as Chair has covered that, but there is capacity. I mean, there's COP17 now to actually push also alternative energy sources. We have a project currently that we are, coincidentally doing with our partners in Korea to actually to deploy PCs. So if we have to deploy in an area where there are no computers, it's part and parcel of this project that we'll also deploy, we'll deploy computers in there. In terms of the types of vehicles, you don't need a special kind of vehicle. We're busy now talking to Hyundai in North Africa for this. It's just an ordinary vehicle where you just install devices and it works. So you don't need a special kind of vehicle that needs to be imported somewhere. The human element, you know, Korea is one country that's leading in terms of cyber security. It depends. The system can be encrypted. You know, it depends on how you want to, you know, in terms of accessibility, how you want to create that access for human beings. You encrypt it. If you say you're the highest authority in the company and you're the only person who's allowed to tamper with the scores or whatever, we know if there's tampering taking place, we know who to speak to. So the issue of human tampering is really not that much of a problem. And again, it depends. If you want to totally eliminate the human element, you could easily do that. And we agree that in terms of implementing this going forward, the development of education and science and technology will be key in terms of assisting with the implementation and all of that. Synergies, the system that has been presented, as much as Madam Chair indicated, we're looking at different audiences and targets, but they definitely are overlaps and synergies that we could see. You know. Yes, thanks, ma'am.
We have time constraints. There's a meeting that I need to attend at 1 of our chief and chairperson. Mr. Ronald is catching a flight, and I would want him to say something, and I also would want to wrap up. And our researcher is also wanting to say something. If we can all be brief, thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you just once again for allowing the IA time in an unscheduled meeting. Thank you very much indeed for that. But certainly to reiterate the call for a workshop for next year, we certainly would like to extend our offer of whatever expertise that we have or bring to the table and how we could possibly work with this committee and the researcher just to provide a better sense of exactly what's going on, just to record our thanks. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Without belaboring the point that you made with regard to the accuracy of information, I would just like to rectify the issue pertaining to the 14 billion. Actually, this was a typing error on my part. I wanted to say it would cost the country more than 40 billion.
And also, you had indicated that you are only focusing on fatal accidents, and the information that was coming from Mr. Ronald was not only confined to fatal accidents.
Madam Chair, our data suggests takes into account fatalities, serious injuries, minor injuries, and damage as well. So it's the total bill for road crashes in this country.
That is what I had as the cost for different figures. But that one was only for fatal accidents, and that one was for the total cost of our road accidents. Thank you. What I would want to say here is, firstly, to again explain how these presenters who are here came to be invited. I don't depend on the researcher to do the research for me. I do my own research. That's how I select people that would come here. And also I would make sure that I bring in people that can complement each other, and you have seen that.
but I also read and respond to letters that are written to me as the chairperson of this portfolio committee, and get back to those people either by phone or I go and meet with them to understand the points that they are making so that I can then have a better understanding. And that is what I have done. Some of the people I have not met with, but I did communicate with them to try and understand the issues that they are raising to me and also the solutions that they are offering to me, because we have a responsibility of working together to build this country. And it is within that context that I do something. Lastly, I would want to thank all of you, mainly the presenters, for the love of South Africa, and also for choosing to save the lives of the people, to reduce the pain and misery in families that happens as a result of the accident. For choosing also to save government, the money that is spent on accidents, which could have been better utilized if it was spent on development. I also want to thank you because you have chosen to offer yourself and help the government by availing yourself to say, we would want to be part of the solution, not the problem. You could have chosen to mobilize other people and march in the streets. Or you could have chosen to mobilize people and submit petitions that are telling us how bad we are in terms of the strategies that we have put in place, how naive we are in terms of not understanding the technology that exists in other countries, and that would not have helped in building this country. So you chose to become part of the solution and give a constructive criticism that says, here is the problem, but there is also a possible solution. Other people don't do that. They only talk about how bad we are. And I think that is a very, very important value. And because you have done that, I would want to keep you as this small core group that we would work with towards in preparing for the workshop. But I also want to relate how that made me to also look at South Korea. The state president was engaging with me on issues of development. And he pointed out that, you are saying that transport requires us to have science and technology that is active, higher education that develops the curriculum that relates to the needs of the development of the transport industry. And then he said, I would recommend to you that look at Korea, because Korea, South Korea, is a country that was dependent on donation, which means it was a poor country. And they were able to take themselves out of that situation by focusing on education and training. And then he said, go and read the speech of the former president, Thabo Mbeki, State of the Nation Address of 2001, where he highlighted that South Africa would need to develop the type of skills that are required to develop the economy of the country and deal with social problems and challenges of the country. I did that, and it is based on that information that we are seated here today. And I would want to thank all of you because some of you came at their own cost, and those that could not afford to come and we needed their contribution, we were able to carry their cost. But we needed your contribution like yesterday because we have a responsibility of ensuring that we turn the problems of this country into challenges and work together to find solutions. You will receive letters that would indicate what type of assistance we would require from each and every one of you in preparing for the workshop. We would be planning to have the workshop round about February, because that is when we begin to look at the strategic plan of the department and the entities. And if we can have the workshop before that, we would then be able to take that information and filter it in the strategic plan for next year. And we would want to thank you, Mr. Collins, for the perseverance as well as the patience in you and the resilience of taking on the bashing that comes your side as if you are the one who created the problem that you found yourself in the RTMC. And we want to recommit ourselves that we will not bash you, but we will work with you to find the solutions that RTMC requires, because RTMC is our own baby. So we can't sit and be the spectators and say to the baby that he gave birth to, you should be running. We should actually make sure that that baby gets all the vitamins and the nutrition that it requires to actually stand up and run. And we will continue to support you. Thank you very much. And I declare the meeting closed.